Rose is getting set up, one thing I did neglect to mention is that they, Marty and Rose both want to conduct this, not so much as a lecture, but as kind of a give and take class kind of discussion. So if you feel inclined and would like to answer questions or participate, please feel free to do that.
Yeah, if you'd like to ask questions along the way, that'd be great too. But, it's a pleasure to be here. I know that you've recently had a gospel meeting, within the last week or so, and for this to be a Friday night and this number to turn out with an interest in a subject like this, it means a great deal to us, and it's good to be together with family. I'm glad that Gary was willing to recognize that I'm his brother-in-law. Our wives, Susan and Kay, are sisters. And it's been one of the real blessings, I have to say, of my life to be a part of that family. It's a very close family. It's meant a great deal to me in terms of strengthening me as a Christian and learning things from watching those who are a good deal older than myself, like Gary and Susan, along the way. I've appreciated that. But Marty's had family here in the past. His son, Mason, worshipped here. His daughter-in-law, Meredith, they were together here at this congregation. And we share some members between the Embry Hills congregation where we're from in Atlanta and your congregation here, the Varson boys and the Buselmeyers and Laney Griffin. I think Andrew Shannon worships here from time to time. So very grateful to know that you've taken care of them, and hopefully they've been a real blessing to you as well along the way. I just want to say a few things by word of introduction, give you a little bit of insight into the two of us, because as we talk about some of the things that we'll have to say, it may be useful to you to know what experience we've had in the congregations where we've been before. There's a couple other family members, David and Anna, back there. It's good to see y'all here tonight as well. My wife, Kay, and I moved to Atlanta after college in 84. And so we've worshipped at the same congregation now for a little over 30 years. For the last 8 years, I've served as an elder of that congregation. Marty was an elder there for 13 years. He's not an elder now. Marty resigned as an elder following the death of his wife a little over a year ago now. And I say that to you, I think it's important for you to kind of know the fact that he was an elder, he's not now, but it also illustrates something that's very important about this kind of study, and that is the need for men to always be preparing themselves to take on whatever service they can render in the kingdom of God, and being ready maybe for something more than what they might have seen themselves needing to do. His decision was a personal decision. As we go through some things this weekend, those of you who share the time in the workshop will understand how important the role of a wife is in regard to the work of an elder. But we miss his service a great deal. And I hope that will help to sober us as we think about the things we don't control in this life and preparing ourselves in terms of being ready to serve in another capacity. There are a lot of reasons for this study. You think about the time that we're going to spend on this. I think hopefully this will help us to appreciate more the plan that God has in regard to elders, their purpose, and we hope to kind of expose you a little bit to the day-to-day aspect of the work. You might sometimes wonder, what do those elders do? And I think we'll give a little bit of understanding in that regard, but I thought it might be useful for you to have an idea, just a roadmap of what we're going to do along the way. So let's take a look at this. This will show you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I want to start by saying what we're going to do tomorrow morning. There are really four sessions there. We'll probably devote about an hour or so to each one. This is material that we had prepared a good while back for some men at Embry Hills. We actually have six lessons all together. We're only going to go through four of those, but we've included the other two in the lesson material we'll give out. So we'll talk about the nature of the work. We have the sheep shepherding, flock shepherding. I have more to say about that by way of introduction tonight. And then focusing on developing your own plan. Where are you as a man and in your service? What you need to do to prepare and develop yourself? And then we'll repeat those same four classes or sessions, rather, in the afternoon beginning at 2 o'clock. Now tonight, my role is to introduce what elders are all about. And you see that little one next to that is to say that's very similar to the kinds of stuff that we'll talk about in the workshop tomorrow morning, the nature of the work. And then on Sunday morning during the worship period, Marty will preach a lesson about the shepherding of sheep, which is really the second one there in the workshop. And he'll have a lot to say that will be useful to this entire congregation. He'll also speak tonight, though, about the role of an elder in shepherding the entire flock. And there's a distinction between those two. And then I have some things to say on Sunday morning, not so much about how that men may prepare themselves, but I think there's a role for the whole congregation in helping men to advance and to mature in the Word and in their ability to perhaps one day serve as an elder. So that's our roadmap as we'll go through that. And I'll also acknowledge to you, it's a little unusual for the two of us to be doing this. We're not full-time evangelists. By now, we've done this a few times. We ought to kind of know what it is we're going to do, for better or worse. But that's not our full-time vocation at all. And we have no standing in this congregation. It's a humbling thing to stand before you and talk about the work of the elders, where you have four elders here, and they're doing, to my knowledge, a very fine work, and you need to be respectful of what they're doing. But at the same time, we hope to offer a perspective to you. Having both served as elders, there's that perspective. But there's another side of this, too. I told you that I had moved to Embry Hills, to Atlanta. We started worshiping in Embry Hills in 1984. I believe Marty and Mary had... Marty grew up in the Atlanta area, but had returned the year before that. In 83, three men had been appointed as elders for that congregation. It had elders before, but had gone through a period of time without elders. But for our family, from 84 on, from the time that we moved and the raising of our three kids, there have always been elders there. And so I have had the benefit of watching men ahead and the way that they conducted themselves, and also thinking about the things that I needed to do and following their lead, but also being engaged in the service that I could render along the way. And I hope that some of that perspective will be useful to us as we go through this. Let me ask you a question to begin with. I know that some of you may be from other congregations. A lot of you are college students here, so you've come from a lot of different backgrounds. I want you to think about how old you were the first time that you were a member in a congregation that had elders. Some of you have to kind of do math and stuff. Think for just a moment. Figure out how old you were. And so let me ask you this. How many of you were older than 50? There's not a lot of you older than 50 here necessarily. That was the first time. You kind of raise your hand just a little bit. Let's see it. So several of you were older than 50 the first time you were in a congregation with elders. How about older than 40? Okay. 30? First time? And how many of you were older than 20? That would be me. I was 24 or so. Okay. And how many of you here basically have always been where there were elders? You don't remember a time. That's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing. There have been places where we've gone where a good portion of the congregation has never... There aren't elders now, and they've never been a part of a congregation that had elders. It's good to know the number of you, but it's very different from person to person in regard to this. I've got three goals tonight. The first goal that I'd like to accomplish is to give you a broad perspective on what the Bible has to say about elders. We're going to look at a lot of passages. We're not going to spend much time on each one. But I want you to have this understanding that elders are talked about all through the New Testament. After we get past the gospel accounts, they begin to be a very central part of the story of the New Testament. And so we want to talk about what their work is, what the purpose behind them, and God's plan for elders. The second goal, though, is to try to impress upon all of our mind the value of elders. If they accomplish what God really wants them to accomplish, what's the benefit to the congregation? What's the benefit to you as an individual Christian? And then lastly, I want to introduce this description of elders as shepherds So that a lot of the material and things that we'll have to say throughout this weekend will come back to this idea. If elders are shepherds, then sometimes they're concerned about the flock, the entire congregation, the group, and sometimes they're concerned about individual sheep. And I'm going to finish by trying to tell you what we believe is the most important part of that work. If I ask you, give me a passage that talks about elders, what's the first passage that comes to your mind? Just quickly, if you had to say, okay, where in the New Testament is there a passage about elders? What would it be? 1 Timothy 3, did I hear that? Any other, just quickly. If it's not 1 Timothy 3, what might it be? All right, 1 Peter 5, we'll talk about that one. All right, Acts 20, and then what's the other passage like 1 Timothy 3? Titus 1. I think most of the time what's going to come, if you have to think very fast, it's going to be 1 Timothy 3 or Titus 1. Or, in the case when my mind doesn't work as fast as I'd like it to, it's that passage about the qualification of elders. It's somewhere in 1 Timothy. It's chapter 3. We are, among those goals in this weekend, is not to spend much time talking about the qualification of elders. That may be a surprise for a lot of you. We'll have very little to say about that. In part because the qualifications describe who is going to serve as an elder. And a lot of what we want to focus on throughout this weekend is what is the work that they do. And you can think, and I know you've had other studies here about the qualifications themselves about elders. But there's so many other passages that go past those qualifications. Ones like 1 Peter 5, Acts 20, but even more than those, which I think are those four, are probably the ones that come to mind most of the time. Let's go through a long list of these and do it in a rather quick kind of fashion here. Here are a number of those, beginning with Acts chapter 11. That's the first time that elders are mentioned. We've just begun a study at home about shepherds, taking some of the material we'll look at tomorrow. And then Marty in the first class mentioned the idea of Theophilus reading the book of Acts. He's read through 10 chapters of it as Luke has written it for him, and it's not until he gets to chapter 11 the first time you hear about elders. Now, he might have worshipped somewhere where there were elders, so he knew what they were. But if not, maybe surprising, suddenly we're talking about elders when there was this famine in Judea and relief was sent to the hands of the elders there. In Acts chapter 14, in verse 23, remember as a result of Paul's journey, he travels back through the cities where he had taught the gospel, and it talks about how they had appointed elders in every church. Well, it seems like the importance is stressed by the fact that there needed to be elders everywhere in that. In Acts chapter 15, you know that Paul, James, Peter, there were apostles that came together there in the city of Jerusalem. They were trying to deal with this false teaching that had gone out about the gospel. What should they do about that? How should they communicate what they decided on that occasion? If you look carefully at that passage, you'll find out that the elders were also part of making that decision about what they needed to do on that occasion. And then in Acts chapter 20, in verse 17, it talks about the fact that there were elders in the city of Ephesus, and they had come to meet with Paul in Miletus so that he could talk to them as he's making a journey back to Jerusalem. In verse 28 there, it talks about them as being overseers who were to care for the church of God. And Marty will have a lot more to say about Acts 20 and some things he'll mention tonight. In Acts chapter 21, you've got Paul on another occasion, at the end of this occasion, coming back into the city of Jerusalem. And there was some concern there in Jerusalem among the Christians that were there because some rumors had been spread about what it was that Paul was practicing and teaching as he had gone about teaching Gentiles the gospel. And it's the elders who meet with Paul, an apostle, and tell Paul what it is that they wanted him to do in terms of his conduct there while he was in Jerusalem that would be beneficial to the unity of that church. So you have here elders very active, and we'll talk about some of that a little bit later on. Ephesians 4, they're mentioned as being shepherds who are a benefit, a gift from God to the church. In Philippians chapter 1, the overseers or the bishops Another word, I'm going to talk about that in a minute, are mentioned along with the deacons. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 5, we already mentioned Titus 1 is a place where those qualifications are given. But in verse 5, Titus was told that he was someone who would put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. So once more, you see this idea that, elders ought to be everywhere. Every church, it would be useful for them to have them. And then Titus was to be busy in helping to appoint them. Titus chapter 1, 1 Timothy 3, we've mentioned those. The qualifications are given. And if you think about this for a minute, it's not there on that slide, but in my notes it points out what we've done so far is we've gone through the book of Acts, beginning with chapter 11. More and more you see the elders there. And then all through the letters of Paul, he's talking about elders. There are other places too, like 1 Thessalonians 5, where he mentions elders as well. And then you have in the letter of Peter, 1 Peter chapter 5. Someone mentioned that before. We're going to look at that passage a little more carefully in a few moments. You have also in the book of Hebrews some things said about the benefit of elders to individual Christians and some instructions to the congregation how they should respond to elders. You have it in the book of James as well, chapter 5 and verse 14. One way of remembering some of this is you'll notice there's so many places where it's chapter 5. 1 Timothy 5 talks about it, 1 Thessalonians 5, James chapter 5. That's a little bit of a helpful thing to find some of these, but many other passages well beyond those. So, who are elders? There are some different names used for elders in the New Testament. They're all the same office, though. Here are three groups of names. Put these together for just a moment. It's going to depend on your translation, but there are words in the original language that sometimes are translated as elders. Other times are translated as the presbytery or presbyters. What does that make you think of, presbyters? Presbyterians, right? And you're going to notice that in some of these words are some things that make you think about models of leadership the way that some denominations do them. And some of the differences and even some of the debates and disputes between different denominations have come down to what they thought should be the model of leadership. But in the New Testament, these are all the same office. We don't use the word bishop very often, do we? In the English Standard Version, it will use the word overseer. That's the same word as bishop, and we're probably a little more comfortable with the word overseer than we might be with bishop. And then there's the idea of a pastor. We're not so comfortable with that either, because oftentimes a pastor might be in say, a certain denomination, the one leader that they have. Or they'll speak about having the pastor. Every once in a while, somebody will come to our congregation and afterwards say, I want to speak to the pastor. And of course, everybody looks at one of the elders. They find the first elder and say, well, he's a pastor. He's our pastor. But that word is also a shepherd. And we're going to use that phrase and that understanding in a number of different ways. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this tonight, but I do want to kind of point to a few passages that use those kinds of words. And I want you to notice how they're used interchangeably, which suggests that while there are three groups of words to describe this, it's all the same office. And if we were comfortable with it, we could talk about the four bishops that are here at this congregation, leading and guiding this congregation, or the four pastors that are here. But most of the time, we're a little more comfortable speaking of them as elders, but all of those would be fine. Here are some of those passages. First of all, the idea of a presbytery or an eldership. You remember how that Timothy was told by Paul that he needed to stir up that gift that he had received by the laying on of the hands of the, well, it's going to depend on what your translation says. The English Standard Version will talk about a council of elders. Some will say the eldership. And it may even say, and I believe it could be in the King James Version, it talks about a presbytery as being the word there that's used. In Titus chapter 1, in verse 5, Titus was told to work toward the appointment of elders in every town. Would you pay attention to that verse? Because in a moment, in that same passage there in Titus 1, you're going to see a different word used. And in the first place, elders are mentioned. That office is mentioned. It's in Acts chapter 11, again in Acts chapter 14. All of those are this word, elder or presbytery. The second word, shepherd, is not used quite as often. It is part of that Ephesians 4 and verse 11, that there are those that are a gift who are shepherds. But not only does it say that, in 1 Peter 5 and verse 2, where Peter is addressing those that are elders, as Peter was an elder, not just an apostle, he was also an elder. Those elders are told that they need to shepherd the flock. So there's a verb, but what you see are elders who are shepherding. And that helps to combine those two offices. It's just one office. There are two words to those two. And then you have the word for overseer or bishop. And you see the Greek word there, episkopos? So what does that make you think of? Episcopalian. And that's why there are bishops in the Episcopalian church. Again, it's a little bit of a different leadership model than that of presbyters, the way the Presbyterians would do it. But it's long after the first century is over, before anybody begins to think in those words as being about different offices or having anything to do many centuries later with different denominations using those. And that's sometimes kind of an interesting conversation that you can have with someone in regard to this being really one office. I also noticed something interesting about that particular word in the Greek. I don't know if it's really a compound word, but it's a combination of two words that have to do with overseeing, epi, which is why the word that's often translated instead of bishop is an overseer. But it's also that word that scopos, like a scope. And so it's the idea of a vision. And elders have something that they are overseeing and with a goal or with a vision in mind that they are focused on. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, in verse 1, which is that list of qualification, it's really described as being a list of qualifications for those that are bishops. But in Titus's account, Titus first was told that he needed to appoint elders in every town. And then he is told in verse 7 that these are the qualifications for an overseer. Do you see how often these words are used interchangeably? Another place you'll see that is in Acts chapter 20, where Paul is said in verse, an earlier part of that, as having called the elders. And then down in verse 17, they're called the elders. In verse 28 of Acts chapter 20, they're spoken of as being overseers. One office. Three different groups of words. And we often use two different ways of describing each of those. So you got about six different ways if you want to start to speak of your elders here as bishops, pastors, shepherds. You got a lot of choices in terms of these various words that are here. Now, more important though than just who are they, what are they supposed to do? What do you see elders doing as you go through your New Testament? Well, they were to rule. And 1 Timothy 5 and verse 17 talks about those who rule well. I just want to say one of the interesting parts of our having traveled and talked to different groups about elders and then having opportunities to sit down and talk to them in smaller groups. Sometimes we've gone to congregations that have never had elders. There's a fear factor to that. There's a worry and anxiety. Here is a group that has somehow or another managed to function along the way without those that would be elders. And now, if there are those who are elders, there's an understanding that elders are to rule. They're to make some decisions. And there may be decisions that they make that otherwise would have been made in a broader way by the rest of the congregation. We're not very comfortable in this country with that concept in general. And so there is sometimes that anxiety about them. And we're going to talk about in a moment about the manner in which elders ought to rule. But we should put it out on the table at the very beginning. They're going to make decisions that ought to be followed by the rest of the congregation. There's some other things too, though. Look over at 1 Peter chapter 5. I'd like you to open up your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 5. There are a number of things that Peter had to say to fellow elders there, beginning with verses 2 and 3. And what I want us to notice out of 1 Peter 5 are some of the implications about the work of elders based on what it says here, beginning with verse 2 of 1 Peter 5. Here, Peter says to these other elders, he says, "Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those who are in your charge, but being examples to the flock." I think those statements that Peter has to make to those elders have a number of implications about what they would do. First of all, here, what he's saying to them is that they are to shepherd the flock. And as we pointed out before, that's a verb. There's something they're doing on behalf of the congregation. And I think he uses this illustration of a shepherd and a sheep is to draw in mind the need that sheep have and the value of having a shepherd. And we will hopefully bring up in our discussions through this weekend a number of ways that the shepherds are valuable to the flock. There's some other things too. He says, not under compulsion. Now, it seemed to imply that there had been a process for selecting those men and then appointing those men to serve as elders. So they had a duty or an office to which they had been appointed to. And they weren't supposed to take on that role as being kind of compelled or forced into that, or maybe even them on their own trying to compel folks to allow them to take that leadership. There was some kind of a process that had been gone through for them to take on. But it's a duty, and it is an office that they took, not for shameful gain. And what might that imply in regard to these men if they had an opportunity to have a gain? What would they be involved with? Collections, the funds, the Lord's treasury there would be something that they ought to, some way or another, be involved. So some of their decision-making is going to relate to money. It could even be a reference back to 1 Timothy 5, talked about those who ruled well might be worthy of double honor, seeming to say that some elders would be supported, especially those that were involved in teaching the Word. And we've been blessed with that. And you have an elder who's in that same kind of condition here. But those might be opportunities. So while on the one hand he's saying this negative, be careful, don't do that, it does imply something about the actual work of those elders. And then they were not to be domineering. So certainly the idea from the very beginning here is that elders are going to rule. But the manner in which they are to rule is not by dominating people. It's not by pushing folks. And one of the things that we'll stress throughout this is the only way that elders are ever going to be able to lead is if individual Christians are willing to follow. If they're not willing to follow, there's no mechanism. We were joking in the car on the way here. It's not like elders get to reduce your salary of some kind. They don't fire people. There's not the same kind of leverage that leaders in other capacities in life have. There's this willingness that ought to be there on behalf of the congregation to follow. But it also speaks about the fact here, elders are leading. But the manner in which they lead is not to be done in a domineering type of fashion. Some other things, though, as well, that elders do. They equip the saints. We've mentioned Ephesians 4, verse 11, about this benefit, this gift, rather, that was given to the church in the form of elders. Well, this gift, among other gifts, was for the benefit of individuals who would be equipped for the work of ministry. What's going to get you ready to really serve the Lord? What's going to prepare you for the service that you can do? Elders should be a gift to individuals to prepare them and to help them. They were to pray for the sick in James chapter 5 and verse 14. And elders are those who are constantly involved in making decisions on behalf of congregations in very specific circumstances. And the New Testament has some of these. In Acts 11, that first occasion when elders were mentioned in chapter 11, verse 29, there was a situation in which there was a famine in Judea, and Christians in other places had determined they were going to help them. And so what they did was they sent money to those churches, but they put it into the hands of the elders. Well, that means the elders were active and involved in the distribution of these funds to help those individuals that were in physical needs in the congregations where they were. They were involved in those doctrinal matters, as we talked about in Acts chapter 15, where they had to deal with that false teaching that was going on. What should be done? There's another thing that elders are going to be active in. What is the truth? How do we handle it when there's false teaching? What do we need to do in regard to that? And then there are these kind of, think of them as personality issues. There were some rumors about Paul. There were some things that were being said about him that could have a damaging effect on the congregation there in Jerusalem. And the elders were on the forefront of dealing with that and trying to make sure that it was not disruptive to the harmony and the unity of that congregation. So these are some of the things that elders do. But I want you to think for a moment about what the congregation does and about the blessing that they have because there are elders. First of all, responsibility is to follow. Remember we said the only way that elders are really going to be able to lead a congregation is if the individuals there are willing to follow them. And I'm going to point to a number of passages later on, and along the way we'll talk about those passages that put a responsibility on the congregation to follow. Passages like, I don't think I have them up here, but Hebrews 13 and verse 7 talks about that. We're going to look at verse 17 in more detail a little bit later. In 1 Peter 5 and verse 5, having given some instruction to the elders, Peter then turns to those and he speaks about those that are elders. It may be he's just simply referring to those that are older, but those that ought to receive that kind of respect, they were to be, younger were to obey them. And then down in verse 5, it also talks about the humility that a congregation was at. All of this kind of involved in the following, the lead and direction of elders. But they're to also assist and join in the work. And one of the things that's often misunderstood, now we've got elders, and they're going to make all those decisions. And if that's a new thing, sometimes that can be kind of worrisome. But then you begin to get in this habit of expecting the elders to do most everything. So they now are going to take care of the work. What is it that the rest of us are to do? One of the chief things that we'll say over and over throughout this weekend study is the need for elders to be involved in working with individuals in their spiritual condition. How can shepherds help sheep? How can they know individuals well enough to be able to give an account for their soul, which is what Hebrews 13 and verse 17 talks about? How can they do that if they're not truly active in reaching out to those that are drifting away from the Lord and they understand their weaknesses and they're trying to help with that? Are elders the only ones that are involved in that kind of work? In Galatians 6 and verse 1 and 2, it talks about an individual who is falling away, who is their service is weakening to God. He addresses, Paul does in this passage, you who are spiritual should restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. All of us who are spiritual have a responsibility to reach out to those that are lost or drifting away from God. It's not just the elders' work, but it's at the heart of what they do. But everyone has some responsibility to be involved in regard to that. And you think about the role of deacons and all the work that needs to be done in a congregation. The only way that can be done is if everyone's willing to assist and to join in that work. But then there are all these blessings, all these benefits that comes to individuals who have elders that are there. I just want to remind you again of some of those passages and these multiple blessings that I think that are there. Ephesians 4 and verse 11 again. What is it that you personally need to be able to prepare yourself for the future, to deepen your understanding of God's Word, to be able to join in to the work of ministry that's mentioned there. Elders should be a part of helping you to be ready to do that. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5 talks about how the elders are to care for God's church. Aren't you grateful when there are those who care for you? And we're going to look at that passage in a little bit deeper on in just a few moments. Hebrews 13 and verse 17. If you look at that passage, which we're going to look at right toward the end of our comments tonight. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, again, it points out the fact that elders are to give an account for the souls of individual Christians. And he says that they ought to be able to do that for you. Let them do that with joy. Else, it would not be, the English Standard Version will say, it wouldn't be of an advantage to you. The other translations are going to say something like, it would be unprofitable to you. In other words, if you're not willing to follow and to allow the elders to really care for your individual soul, you're going to lose out in something. It'll be worse. It'll be unprofitable for you. You will have lost an opportunity for something that could be an advantage to you if you allowed them to do that. How do they do that? Well, I want you to think for just a moment about some of those passages we mentioned where in the New Testament elders were involved in specific kinds of situations. If elders today face similar situations, how would that be beneficial to a congregation? For example, that passage in Acts chapter 11 and verse 29 where there was this great benevolent need that was there because of the famine in Judea. Can you imagine that those congregations not having elders and now funds are flowing in from somewhere else to take care of those needy Christians? How long would it take them to decide who's going to do what before they could even begin to distribute those funds and begin to help people who were in need immediately if they had not had elders? The fact that there were elders in those churches allowed that kind of work to be done faster, to be done, I would assume, by more individuals who could get involved because those elders could direct that work from the very beginning. But everyone knew who was going to direct this work that had to be done right away, and it had to be done something new. They didn't have the funds before. They hadn't had this need before. And now there was a very urgent need. You had that passage in Acts chapter 15 where there was this issue about false teaching, and the elders were involved along with the apostles in making some decisions about it. What happens in a church where somebody begins to teach something that does not appear at first to be in keeping with the New Testament? What should be done about that? What if that individual is a very mature and very persuasive individual who's teaching and saying things that, the more you look at it, it's very clear it's not part of the New Testament? What should be done with it? See the value of having an elders who would know how to deal with that? But what if, on the other hand, that individual is a new Christian, immature in their faith? How do you handle what they're teaching in a way that protects the flock but also helps that sheep? See the value that elders offer when they have... If you didn't have elders in a situation like that, how do you deal with this individual, perhaps a new Christian, teaching something that's questionable? How do you deal with it in a way that helps that soul and protects the congregation? Elders are invaluable in circumstances like that. And then you had a situation in Acts chapter 9. And in this situation, if you've paid attention, in Acts chapter 9, we haven't gotten to elders yet, right? First time they're mentioned is in chapter 11. One interesting thing that happens in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, is early on the apostles are doing many of the things that later on you see the elders doing. I think they helped to set a template and a model of leadership that elders would follow. Not completely, obviously. There was revelation that the apostles would deliver. The elders had nothing to do with that. But on this occasion, what happened in Acts chapter 9 was that this man named Saul, who had been out attacking Christians, physically harming them, has been converted, apparently. Is he really a Christian or not? And he comes to Jerusalem and he wants to be a part of that congregation. And the apostles are the ones, by the way, through the help of, we talked about assisting and helping those in leadership. Barnabas was a help in regard to this for those men who were the leaders there. But do you see how valuable that was to the church in Jerusalem? That there were leaders there who could make this decision about whether or not this Saul should be allowed to be a part of that congregation. One of the more difficult memories of my life as a Christian was being a part of a congregation when I was very young and did not have elders, where somebody moved there and there was question about what they had done somewhere else years before, and a decision had to be made about whether or not that individual would be, and his family would be, members there. And if he is a member, will he be a full member? Would he be able to participate in public? All kinds of issues that went on for months and months and eventually led to a great disunity and disruption inside of that congregation, despite great efforts by good-hearted men to deal with it. If there had been elders, it was interesting, it took me a long time to remember how different all that would have played out if there had been elders who were willing to make a decision. A decision that may not have pleased everyone in that congregation. In fact, some might, for purposes of their conscience, have decided that they could not agree with the decision of those elders and might have decided to have gone somewhere else. But how quickly all of that would have been resolved without the disunity and the disheartening examples to a number, especially of younger people that were there. That's a value in having elders who can make those kinds of tough decisions. All right, I want to kind of wrap up here. There's some other benefits you should be thinking about. Why is it that churches really need elders? And I think it has to do with the nature of the work. And much of this is as an introduction to you, the way we'll use some terminology throughout this week. And I've already been doing this. We've talked about the idea of flock shepherd. Very important. But I don't think that it's at the heart of the work of an elder. It's not the primary thing that they do, despite the fact that it's an important one. It's not so much just leading the whole body, the whole congregation. And oftentimes, that is what our picture of elders is all about, right? The parking lot needs to be repaved. Who's going to decide when? Well, that's the elders. Right? The elders are going to decide what time that we meet. We always laugh at home when the collection is taken up. Frequently, the men will say, the elders have appointed this time for us to have this collection. And we always think, when did we ever do that? We don't remember that. This is just when we did it. But elders make those kinds of decisions that affect the flock. And they're important. But I think there is a more important aspect of this work. And that has to do with the shepherding of every sheep that are a part of the flock. It's the sheep shepherding, as we'll refer to it through this. And I want you to look at a couple of passages that I think really speak to the responsibility that elders have to individuals. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17. Here's the responsibility, by the way, of the congregation again, to follow, to obey your leaders, and to submit to them. Why did it? Because they're keeping watch over your souls. As those who will have to give an account. This is the most worrisome passage in all of the scriptures for me as an elder is to think about that. That those who come and place membership that we barely know, that what we're agreeing to do is to take on responsibility for their souls. But not only that, he says, let them do this with joy. We had talked about that before, because there's an advantage to you if you allow that to take place. On the other hand, there's this passage in 1 Peter 5, verses 2 through 4. And in this passage where he talked to them about shepherding the flock, you'll notice at the end of this, he wanted those men who were serving there as shepherds to remember the chief shepherd. The chief shepherd is Christ. And elders should think often about the example that he set in regard to being a shepherd. Here are some things that Jesus had to say in John chapter 10 about what a shepherd is all about. Here's what the chief shepherd said about shepherding. He mentions the fact that he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. He speaks about how they know his voice. There should be a relationship between elders and the members of that congregation. They should know their voice. It should be a familiar thing to them. But elders need to know the individual. I know my own, and my own know me. Our attendance at times at home now goes above 400 on Sunday morning. And it's greatly disturbing for me to have those who are leaving, and I try to go to the back, and here's somebody, and I'm supposed to know them, and know them well, and to give an account for their soul, and I'm struggling to remember what their name is. That's not really the picture the way it should be. There should be this close connection and relationship here. And then finally, I'll leave you with this passage here in 1 Timothy. This is one of those passages, by the way. This is the qualifications of elders. Here's one of the qualifications. It talks about the fact that he must manage his own household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? I want you to think for a moment about the idea that elders are going to care for the church. It seems to be talking there a little bit about that flock shepherding, right? It's that whole congregation, the church there, they're going to care for that. But you notice here that what he says is, how are they going to be able to do that unless they have already demonstrated their ability as a father? And how have things been in their household? You know, the raising of their children. Well, what happened there is that with all dignity, they kept their children submissive. And it talks about something similar in Titus about the raising of their children. What's your picture of a good father? Is it the father that somehow has, you know, he barks an order and all the kids just immediately, you know, kind of straighten up there together? Is it the way that he has everybody on time, in place, everywhere that they go? Is that your picture of a father? He's kind of, as a corporate body, the family's following and doing exactly the way he wants. A good father, you know, is someone who knows every one of his children. He knows the difference between his two sons or his daughter and his sons. He knows the difference in the way they approach certain situations. He understands the strengths and the weaknesses of each one. He knows their heart. He's able to have that deep conversation with each one of them and motivate them to do the right thing. He prays for them individually. You know, that's really the picture of a good father. Isn't that what an elder should do in regard to those individuals? And what a blessing and a benefit it is when that's what's done. And that's the picture that's made. Thank you so much for your attention in going through this. So what we'll have a break for...
Just a couple minutes.
Okay.